All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West. I was going to say the wrong name here. Mountain West Wire. That's where we are, right, Matt?
That's what we are now, anyway.
I was about to say something else, which would have been inaccurate and not correct at all. So, MWCWire.com. Or no, geez, I'm terrible. MWR.com. MWCWire.com. We got some issues with GoDaddy.com, so we're working on that. But MWR.com. Geez, this is a splendid opening to week 11, right? I'm doing awesome.
I wonder if that portends something like within the games themselves that we're about to talk about.
We'll see. I don't know. We got some crazy games this week, but Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff, Mount West Wire. We've been getting, have you received a few emails about inquiries about assisting in the website?
I have seen a few. I have received a few. And if you are one of those people that has sent me like a brief cover letter and a writing sample, thank you very much, first and foremost. I'm planning on getting to those within the next couple of days once the three-day weekend hits. You know, raising my hands in the air for that. If you haven't emailed me yet, definitely go to our website, mwwire.com. Look for the link that says Come Write with Mountain West Wire, and you'll get a sense of kind of what we're looking for. But, you know, even though we have people who are already writing about the teams, never hurts to double up. Never hurts to have more coverage. You know, so if you, for instance, are a Fresno State fan like I am, and you want to write either about the football team or the basketball team or
baseball, you know, they're pretty good.
Any of the Olympic sports, feel free to reach out to us one way or another.
Yeah, like I said, we're not terribly picky. He's got to be decent writing. Because I had a guy, San Diego State guy, he messaged us on Facebook. That's the way too. I'll probably be myself responding on Facebook. I may forward you along to Matt's info or the article he put up. But he's like, well, I just have a science background or whatever writing. Like, people, you may laugh at me, but I've never had a writing background. So you could say, hey, that tells. I mean, that shows. But well, I've done other stuff.
And trust me, like I do a lot of writing. I've also taught writing. It's what I do for my job. So if you're concerned about your writing skills, just give it your best shot because, you know, I'll have resources to help you out with that kind of thing if you do come on board with us. So
we'll help you out. Yeah.
They always say shoot your shot. So go ahead and do that.
Hey, go for it. We have some fun stuff. We like basketball. We got on there. And like people, as long as you can spell correctly, and that's at the bar very low, but spelling correctly helps. Knowing how to use a comma here and there and some paragraph breaks, it's not much to be. Just be, if you want to be funny, that's great. We don't have much humor. If you want to do film breakdown, go ahead and do that. If you want to just talk about a press conference app, and that's good as well. So whatever you want to talk about, essentially, right?
Yeah, and also I live to copy edit, so they always have that going for you too.
So basically, like we said, if you want to be funny, that'd be great. If you want to be recruiting, awesome. If you want to do what our guy Ron Swanson does, write a 103-0 victory over Northern Colorado, that's welcome as well because historical stuff is pretty cool too. Yeah, and like there's a couple years ago, just aside really quick, I started doing a water polo website. I'm like, well, who cares about that? Well, you'd be surprised. Win because you know you can get when you talk to non-revenue sports people and their head coaches, they like to talk a lot. You get do interviews. I had plenty. Like I had a lot of coaches. I didn't make them as personable as I'd like to on some of them. But I knew a few coaches from when I played. But I basically any coach I'd email, they'd respond back, and I had like a 5-question series I did with probably half of all the Division I on the men's side and most of the women's.
Yeah, that's
team.
The kind
so
of thing that you can't
you
talk,
really
get
talk
anywhere
to
else.
Lobos baseball.
So
they're always
if
always
you
like
have
to
an angle,
talk about
if you
swim
have
team
a passion,
Boise State, soccer team in
let us
UNLV.
Know.
Pretty sure the coaches would like to talk to you for a few minutes. So if you like that type of stuff, there's a niche you can find and get people coming to the site and read your stuff or have your insight. If you former player of some small sport, nobody cares about lacrosse. We care about lacrosse. Well if you care about
interviews.
Lacrosse, we'll care about lacrosse. Yeah, we'll go one step further. Yeah. Sure, why not? If it comes our way, sure. Because, why not? You know what I mean? Well, hey, I think UNLV soccer is actually in the whack. Who cares? Right? All right, let's get to business here. Week 11. Whoo, boy. We got a couple things we need to discuss about week 11. I think it's at this point where we need to discuss championship scenarios. we need to discuss who's going bowling or who's not, because there could be 8 teams going bowling potentially. But will they all go to a bowl game? That's a big question.
Yeah, and also if you're a Hawaii basketball enthusiast, who cares if they're not in the Mountain West? We need a Hawaii basketball writer.
No, they do not. They have the off week.
There you go.
They got 5 wins. They're the next closest team that's bowl eligible.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think BYU is an easy matchup?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's only one team this week that can clinch a berth.
Question mark?
There are a couple of others that can take a step forward.
Sure.
But, you know, the only team... Actually, yeah, you know what? That's not even true. Because we'll get to all that.
You've heard us talk about BYU for how many weeks in a row now? 5, 6 weeks? Like the whole season?
I think I may have spoke too soon on that.
As always, I mentioned, but... Yeah, they got Hawaii.
And it's interesting, too, because the two teams that are right there at 4 and 5... Not easy matchups for them this
week. Who matched? I don't know. Well, they'll only be Mississippi State, so whatever. They're not bad. All right, so let's talk about the game, because it's a Friday night matchup.
We'll talk about them again in a minute. But we kind of know what they are at this point.
Is that how
the offense is probably going to be DOA, but the defense still solid.
Sure, why not? We'll see this. I think it's a conference-controlled game, so yeah.
That's something.
Even though they split it with everybody, get a couple of $100,000, go down to UNLV, Sam Boyd Stadium for, 12 more games? 2 more years, something like that, before the Raiders move to town.
Yes.
So this game, a lot of BYU fans are happy.
We're going to talk about them like one or two more times too.
Twitter for BYU. Utah fans like to comment a lot on BYU, despite them.
Oh yeah, because they got UMass sandwiched in between there.
Utah basically dominated them the past decade. A lot of Utah fans had some fun expense of me saying Rebels were a 4-point home favorite over BYU.
It is. Should that be higher? ESPN 2, no less. I believe so.
Achilles, yeah.
I kind of think it should. I mean, especially when you consider that BYU, like Tanner Mangum's out for the year, right? He's done. And, you know, Bo Hodge did not look good against Fresno State last week. And so, you know, while UNLV's defense, you know, on the whole has been a little rough, you know, if you listen to our preview, to me, it kind of seems like maybe they're coming around a little bit. And, you know, in the last couple of weeks, I think you're seeing the secondary, you know, they're not creating turnovers per se, but they've really taken a step forward as far as, you know, kind of limiting damage, kind of limiting big plays, especially, you know, against Fresno State and Hawaii, which, you know, 2 wins in a row right there. They've held quarterbacks, McMarion and Drew Brown, which is, you know, 2 pretty solid quarterbacks altogether, held each of them under 60% completions and held each of them under 6 yards per attempt. And whether that's more on, you know, the coverages, or whether that's more on both those teams being a little bit conservative, you know, there's probably a little bit of truth to both of those things. But, you know, I don't think you can ignore the fact that, you know, whoever they're throwing out there, whether it's Hodge or Coy Detmer at this point, neither of those guys are as good as McMarion or Drew Brown. So I'm not quite sure what they think, you know, other than maybe establishing the run, if Squally Canada can kind of keep his recent run going where he almost had 100 yards last week. But other than that, I'm just not seeing why this game is going to be close.
Well, remember what happened in Utah State when Tanner Mangum went out? It was a Jalen Davis show, defensive show. They basically took over any turnover and turned them into points. Weren't they like plus 6 in that game?
Ugly,
and
really
cost
quick.
7 turnovers, I believe. And so, not that UNLV has the same talent as Jalen Davis back there, but we don't even know who started for BYU, because it may not be Bo Hodge. Because I'm reading through the headlines, see what the press conference or media, whatever availability. Bo Hodge will start if
healthy. Oh, boy.
And then here's the, you know, it's weird. Like, the BYU quarterback situation's a mess. Yeah, Bo Hodge, who in Java noticed injury is, I forget what it was. Did he get hit or something, or something going on during Fresno?
I don't remember the exact injury, but I do know he got hit a couple times really hard.
Looks like, oh, maybe, I don't know. He's had an ankle injury going back to the Utah State game, so maybe it's something with that. But here's the thing, too. Like, they have this guy, Joe Critchlow, who, whatever, who knows. But here's, okay, they're in game, BYU has a couple games left. What, two games, I believe? No, they got Hawaii. So we will talk about them again. We forgot. They got Hawaii to end the season, so two more weeks, we'll talk about them. They got UMass, like we said. But there's this guy on the team, Cody Wilstead. Doesn't want a redshirt.
Well, of course he does.
Wants the opportunity to play now. I'm like, I get that, but it's also like, you're going to bring your redshirt late in this year. Tanner Mangum's going to be the starting quarterback next year. Just take Bo Hodge out there and go with it. You know what I mean? Him and Joe Critchlow. It's like, I don't think it matters, though. It's going to be a mess because it's going to be Lexington Thomas just running like crazy over this defense, in my opinion.
I mean, I think if BYU has any shot of kind of staying in this game, it's going to start with defending against the run. And I think you could kind of see that they had some success, you know, containing kind of sort of Fresno State's running game last week. But, you know, I think we've talked about this before, that UNLV has that kind of explosive element that the Bulldogs themselves haven't really shown all year long. You know, I think, I can't remember if we've talked about it before, but like the fact that Lexington Thomas is averaging nearly 10 highlight yards per opportunity. And if you're not familiar with Football Study Hall, essentially what that is how many yards a running back gains after the offensive line has done its job, which is generally considered the first 4 or 5 yards. So, you know, in those opportunities, he's essentially getting an extra 10 yards once the offensive line has done its job on average. That's huge. And, you know, that's the kind of thing, the kind of explosive element that they didn't really face last week. So if they can't contain him, which, you know, I think it'll be a good test, like, you know, Sione Takitaki, who we haven't really talked much about, oddly enough, you know, considering all the times we talked about the Cougars, like he's up to 9.5 tackles for loss on the year. And, you know, he's a guy who did blow up a couple of plays last week, so I think he's definitely be a factor. But I think UNLV's offensive line in particular is going to be, they're going to be ready for that, I think. And I think they're going to open up holes for Thomas that he's going to be able to take advantage of that Fresno State wasn't always able to last week.
So I think that's the case. Like, it's going to be, I know he mentioned Takitaki, but one thing that could be make a difference, whether how that offensive line plays, I guess a little bit, is who's going to be quarterback. There's no word if it's going to be stick with Johnny Stanton or back to Armani Rogers. So I'm kind of poking around to see. It shouldn't make a difference, really, but it's like, Rogers does bring a different element because he can run a little bit more than Stanton. Stanton's going to want to pass, which I think they'll be fine either way, but Rogers just has a different element because he can run. But Stanton proved to be, at least in one plus game, the much better and more accurate passer.
Yeah, and that was going to be the thing. Like, I think if I were Tony Sanchez, I would probably just stick with Stanton for right now and let Armani Rogers kind of learn.
You know, and get healthy, too.
Because, you know, because it is a small sample size, but, you know, Stanton hasn't thrown any interceptions yet. His completion rate's right around 64%, which if you look at what Rogers has done this year, he's right around 52.5. Hasn't taken any sacks yet, which I think is a positive. And his yards per attempt are a little bit better than Rogers. So, you know, while I think it's pretty clear that, like, the future of this team is still going to be in Rogers' hands, I think if this team wants to get to bowl eligibility, they'll stick with the guy who's played really well in the last couple weeks.
I did find officially, I was looking around while you're talking before, but Stanton's going to start. Rogers will see time. So maybe something sort of like last week, but last week in the second half, Stanton just took over at the third quarter and beyond. So look for both to play. And, like, here's a funny headline. I got it right here. In a second I will, but what's the position on BYU you always complain about? I say that's terrible. I got two hilarity headlines here. One about last week's games where drops were a reason they lost the game versus Fresno State. Is that what is true? Was kind of funny. Oh, I had the other one here. Shoot. No, where did it go? I just had it. Oh, dang it. Something about the wide receivers. This might be their time to step up or something. I'm like, if it takes game 11, come on, you gotta step up. What are you talking about?
It might be. Well, okay. Okay, you know what? You know, yes and no, because, you know, it's not like UNLV is known as, like, a great, you know, pass defense. Like, you know, in the last couple weeks, yes, they have taken a step forward. But, you know, there's only one guy on the team that has more than one interception so far, and that's Chauncey Sism. You know, Dalton Baker, who's basically been starting all year long, still doesn't have an interception. He only has one pass breakup. And, you know, Jericho Flowers, who's, you know, he's had a pretty solid year, I think, but, you know, he only has one interception. So they haven't really created that many opportunities for themselves. So, I mean, I think if you're looking for anything, maybe this is an opportunity for them to really make hay over the middle, assuming Hodge or whoever throws the football can actually get it to someone like Matt Bushman, who, you know, had a pretty good game last week, even when the quarterbacks are mostly ineffective. And Aliva Hifo, who was a little quieter than I expected him to be, he could be a factor in this game too out of the slot. So I'm not going to say it's not possible, but, you know, Hodge is going to have to show he can get them the ball. And from what I've seen from BYU, you know, off and on all season long, I don't really have a lot of confidence in that.
No, it just says they're ready to step up. Like, okay, whatever. Good luck with that. No, it's also funny. I peruse the comments sometimes just because I'm bored. And I like this comment here. To BYU fan over at Deseret News, that's the article I'm looking at where it says Cougar Wideout's hoping to take a step forward against UNLV. He's like, our receivers, and for that matter, entire offense, should have plenty of opportunities to make plays against UNLV's weak defense. Is it really a weak defense? It's not really a weak defense, is it? They got some players out there.
It's gotten a little better.
I don't think it's that weak, but I don't think BYU fans should be talking anything weak. Look at their team.
That's also true.
It doesn't matter, but like UNLV's defense isn't, well, they're not great, but still, it's like, take care of your own house, right? You know what I mean? Like, what are you going to do? It's just the offense is so bad for BYU. Like, KJ Hall was hurt, he might be back in this game, but if Johnny Stanton plays like he did last week, I don't see how BYU is going to be close in this game at all, especially if BYU goes with Bo Hodge and put Critchlow in there, Cody Wilson, if he burns his redshirt to come into play. I just like, for BYU to win this game, I think the way they'd be able to do it is that they'd be able to run the ball well, because they've shown they can run reasonably well, whether it's Squally Canada, KJ Hall, or even, well, I don't think Ula Talatau is going to play because of the pot thing a couple weeks ago, but that's how they're probably going to win, is run the ball against UNLV, and maybe their defense makes a few plays, but I don't think BYU can rush their way to victory.
Yeah, I don't think
so. UNLV is going to win, and they're going to win. Do you know the last time, I should look it up real quick, do you have the last time they've beaten BYU? I think it was like 2005.
I do not have that in front
of me. So I'll look that up. What's your prediction? What's the final score in this matchup?
I don't think it's going to be close. Like, I think that BYU is not going to really be able to do much on offense, and I think UNLV is going to be able to assert themselves on the ground. So I'm going to say UNLV 24, BYU 10.
You think they'll score 10 points?
Well, you know, they got to 13 against Fresno State last week.
You can go to field goals. Like, that's part of the thing too about red zone is terrible for BYU. I'm trying to find why can't I use, I'm on Pre-Stacy, and why can't I find UNLV? Do they list it Nevada, Las Vegas? Yes, they do. That's why. So the last time, this is great stuff. They played 2004, UNLV beat BYU 24-20. The last five out of the last six times, BYU has scored over 42 points and averaged over 50 points per game against UNLV. Also, fun fact.
So you're saying it's going to be a revenge game?
Exactly. Fun fact for you. These teams played the first time they've ever played, 1978. I'd give you 45 guesses. You would never guess where they played their first game ever against each other. I'll give you one guess if you'd like. Or if you'd like no guesses.
No, I'm never going to be able to
Yokohama, guess. Japan.
Really? Well,
December 2nd, 1978. So maybe some, I don't know what the deal that was end of the season, but that year it was UNLV losing 28-24. And also that's the,
I would not have guessed
that. I know, I'm bringing out the facts here. That is the second closest loss in this history for UNLV. 28-24, and then they had a 10-7 loss.
Hmm.
There's been victories for the Rebels, but that's the second closest loss in this history. So there's your fun facts. I say UNLV 31, BYU 7. Lexington Thomas will go off like 175 and a couple scores. Is that bold enough for you?
Oh, yeah.
All right, ready to go on? Next game?
Yeah, let's do it.
I know I'm cutting it out. I think the stupid Zencaster is being dummy, so we'll keep going here. But guess what? Our pristine file that you're recording on your end, at my end, you won't notice that. Just us. So only you and me will have to suffer.
Cool.
So next game. All right, so we go Saturday afternoon. The battle of the 1-8 versus 1-9 team. San Jose State with 9 losses. Nevada 1-8 with 8 losses. We'll go up the line again. Are we sure Nevada is 19 points better than San Jose State?
Ooh.
So many points.
On the one hand, yes, it is a lot of points. But on the other hand, like, I'm trying to look. I wish I had calculated the average margin of loss during conference play. So I'm just going to give it to you just game by game. The amount of points that San Jose State has lost by in conference play so far.
Spoiler, it's a lot.
Okay, so against Utah State, it was 51. Against UNLV, it was 28. Against Fresno State, it was 17. Hawaii, it was 9. BYU, it was 21. And against San Diego State last weekend, it was 45.
So maybe that's low?
I mean, there's kind of like a parabola thing going on where they were never closer to a win than they were at Hawaii, which oddly enough, you know, by Football Study Hall, it's like their best defensive performance of the year. So, you know, I mean, you're talking about a defense that really, you know, the individual playmakers, you know, and I'm talking most specifically about the linebackers in this case, like Frank Ginda's, you know, I think he's a first team all Mountain West pick, like without a doubt. Like, he's leading the nation in tackles. He has like 9.5 tackles for loss. He has 19 run stuffs. But this secondary really hasn't shown an ability to stop anybody this year. And so, you know, for as rough as Nevada looked last week, you know, trying to throw the football off and on against Boise State, they're not going to have that same kind of obstacle this week because, you know, I expected a little bit better of San Jose State's secondary, and they just haven't been very good.
They have not. Like, here's a fact that tells you how bad San Jose State is, and apologies to those who like San Jose State, but they are giving up 42.4 points defensively, second worst in the country. They're only scoring 15 points a game. You want that scoring differential we have for the whole season? 26.5 points per game. They're last in, they're that's minus 21, last in the country in turnover margin. So this is from Chris Murray, Reno Gazette. Spartans can't score, can't stop teams from scoring, and turn the ball over more than any team in the country. That's like the worst thing you can be for a football team. You can't stop anybody, you can't score, and you give up the ball.
Well, okay, so let me put it in another perspective. San Jose State this year has given up 424 points in 10 games. The next closest team, which happens to be Nevada, has only given up 335.
Are you talking about the country or just a conference?
In the conference.
Okay. I'm trying to see who's given up more points during conference play than San Jose State, but nobody. I mean, Nevada might be like top.
Yeah, the answer is still nobody.
The next closest, Nevada's up there. There's like 395. Some Georgia Southern might be it, I think, or Georgia State, one of those two. But here's the thing. Nevada's offense has improved each of the past few weeks. I know last week versus Boise State wasn't all that great. I guess Boise State's defense is really good. I expect Nevada to go off for like 40 points in this game. I think it could be. I think it'd be like maybe 40-14 or something, where Montel Aaron maybe gets the end zone with a touchdown pass or something. But I think it's going to be a lot to a little in this game, and I think I'm going to go Nevada to cover that 19 points.
Here's why I'm not, because, you know, in the last few weeks, you know, for as rough as San Jose State's defense has been, and yeah, some of that has to owe to the fact that they've given up a lot of turnovers. Like, there's a reason that the team, you know, the average starting opponent's field position right now actually ranks 125th in the country. But, you know, Nevada's right there with them. They actually rank 123rd as far as average field position. So I think that this is the kind of instance where, you know, if they can avoid turnovers, which I think at this point it's almost comical that it's still kind of a big if, but if they can avoid turnovers, you know, Nevada's secondary, especially now that they're missing Asani Rufus, he's done for the year with that leg injury he had last week. In conference play especially, they've been kind of a nightmare against the pass. Like, opponents through five games are averaging a 71% completion rate, which is the worst in the conference. They're averaging nearly 10 yards a throw. It's right around 9.5, which is next to last in the conference. And the opponent's quarterback rating is right around 172. So, you know, if you want to put that into perspective, I'm trying to look up like what that's kind of like. Give me one moment and I will tell you. It's like basically making everybody look like Mason Rudolph week in and week out on average. And for those of you who don't know, he's the quarterback at Oklahoma State. So if Montel Aaron can hang on to the football, you know, like, again, big if, you know, and if they could keep him upright, you know, we know that San Jose State has playmakers. It's just, you know, they turn the ball over so often. They just bury themselves so early so often that we really haven't had a chance to see them try to put together a full 60 minutes. But, you know, like, in the long run, I still believe in these guys. And so I don't think it's going to be quite as easy. I don't think it's going to be quite as easy for Nevada to cover as a lot of other people might think it will. I think it's actually going to be a really high-scoring game one way or another.
How many, so what's your prediction here? I think he's still going Nevada, but you think San Jose State could score some points?
I think they're going to cover. I think Nevada's going to have to survive this one. Okay. And it might look like a comfortable score late. I'm going to go Nevada 49, San Jose State 35.
Isn't 35 points a season high, I believe, right? Would that be?
It would be, yes. They scored 34 against Cal Poly back in September.
Crazy. All right, you're going to cover. I'm not. Oh, I guess I give a score. I'll go, I did. 40-10? All right, we'll go with that. Next game on the list. Non-conference game on ESPNU. Texas A&M Aggies hosting the Mexico Lobos. Not SEC.
More importantly, a non-conference game that doesn't involve BYU.
Yeah, exactly. Not involved with BYU in October, November. This typically, isn't this SEC Cupcake weekend usually? The second weekend in November?
You know what? I wish that I had the SEC schedule in front of me, but my best guess is...
Oh, I'm about to in about 5 seconds here, because here's what we got. Not quite. I thought it was this week. Maybe it's next week. There's always that week where they're playing Chattanooga, when Georgia Southern is FCS. Maybe they got... Oh, we got Alabama Mercer in two... Here we go. It's in 2 weeks. Alabama Mercer. I guess Louisiana Monroe Auburn. UAB Florida, but UAB may beat them. Wolf...
UAB is totally going to beat Florida. You heard it here first.
Sorry, Brandon, but it's going to happen. Wofford in South Carolina. So there's that. I think that's kind of maybe Cupcake Weekend, but it's in a couple weeks. So interesting. They have three games. Okay, this is odd here. It's just a weird aside. Friday, November 7, week 12, November 18th, to Saturday. SEC has three Friday games on November 17th. That's odd, isn't it? It's not Black Friday, where you see a lot of those Friday games, but okay, whatever. Let's get back to this game. Texas A&M. My family and brothers will be wanting the Aggies to win. They'll think they'll win by 45 points. I would like the Lobos to cover. However, this isn't the same Lobos we've known the past couple of years.
That's true. You know, and I think especially because the offense has really struggled in the last couple of weeks. Like, the, you know, if you go back over the last 4 weeks, I'm just going to frame it that way. Basically, the last month, like, they've scored 0, 24, 3, and 10 points. And a lot of that blame falls on the offense, like, especially the running attack, which just really hasn't been the same kind of attack that it was before. I'm trying to look up what they were, what they have done on the ground in the last few. Yeah, okay. So here's this. They're averaging about 5.2 yards per carry, which, yeah, some people out there don't care about yards per carry. But
well played.
But here's the thing, because in the last month, they've been, like, really inconsistent in their ability to run the ball. Like, in their close loss against Colorado State, that was probably their best performance of the year. You know, they averaged 6.5 yards per carry. They gave the Rams basically everything they could handle. And in the other three games against Fresno State, Wyoming, and Utah State, they were under 3 yards a carry twice. Hmm. Which, you know, when you consider the track record of this team in the last couple of years, that's almost unheard of. And so while, you know, Texas A&M may not necessarily be the same kind of Texas A&M that we've seen in the past, like, they aren't a top 25 team, they don't have a Von Miller or Johnny Manziel or anything like that. But, you know, is New Mexico going to be consistent enough to move the chains in a way that they really haven't always been, and especially recently? They need to be efficient, I think, more than explosive. But they've been hit and miss in that regard, and I think that's going to be a lot of trouble for them.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal. Like, I know what the deal is. They don't have, like, a Tyron Gibson, to run the ball like they did last year. Like, I actually do think the offense needs to be explosive. They do need to have better running plays than they had the past couple weeks. But the way this offense is so good is that they'll bust off a 30, 50, 60, 70 yard rushing play. That's what makes them dangerous, where they can explode on any given play. I know it's not the norm, but they need to do something where, give me a 20-yard run every now and then, it's 15-yard run sometimes. They're not getting that. They need to do something, get back to that where they're having more big plays, not just running 8 yards at a time, which is still great. But if you're, or not, maybe not that, but your long play can't be like 9 or 10 yards. You have to have a long play of 20-plus, a couple of them. Because this is an offense Texas A&M never sees, mm-hmm. because they, in the SEC, they face running attacks, but nothing unique like this. They don't play Georgia Tech. They don't play Air Force, Navy, Army. So this is a chance where maybe Lobos could get off to a start, because the Aggies defense, it's hard to prepare for this type of game in a week for what the type of offense they're going to do. And it still depends who's going to be the quarterback, and it still looks like, I guess, that's going to be back and forth again.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just going to ask the same question I asked last week. Is it going to make a difference at all?
It hasn't, so why should it change?
I mean, I think to me, if you're going to look for a template for New Mexico to try and pull an upset in this game, it's probably going to look a lot like what they were able to do against Tulsa earlier this year. I think they're going to have to win with defense and special teams. And I think especially, like, the defense is more of like a big if, because, you know, on one hand, the offense has been, you know, nearly as bad as San Jose State as far as giving the ball away. You know, in conference play, they've given it up 16 times in 6 games, and they've only forced 4 turnovers altogether, and they have just 1 interception as a team in conference play. I think all those things are a little bit problematic, but Texas A&M hasn't really been that great at holding on to the ball either. Like, they're only plus 5 on the year, but their quarterback, Kellen Mond, he's a freshman, which I think works maybe a little bit in New Mexico's advantage. He has 6 interceptions in 216 attempts, which isn't, you know, great. His completion rate is only 50%, which is, you know, probably a ray of hope. And his sack rate is, you know, right around 7.5%, which is, you know, it's okay. But I think it shows that, you know, if they can get to the quarterback, they can force him maybe into 1 or 2 bad throws. But then again, you know, that's kind of the big if, because, you know, we just talked about with UNLV that nobody on the team has more than, you know, or rather only one player has two interceptions. Same thing applies to New Mexico too. Like Jacob Gurgel is the only guy on the team with more than one INT. So like that's a big if, but I feel like if there is something worth watching in this game, that is it.
All right, so I'm going to kind of pull away from the actual game coverage here. So if you heard about Kevin Sumlin potentially either on his way out, either quitting or I'm done with this garbage, what's happening? They've lost two in a row. If the Lobos happen to pull off the upset, is Kevin Sumlin going to have a job Sunday morning?
Ooh, that's a good question. What's his buyout? I wish I knew.
I'll pull up the USA Today database real quick while you try to ponder that question.
I feel like it's a lot. And my guess is they'd probably wait until the end of the season because, you know, down the stretch they have at Ole Miss, at LSU, and they may just want to see if he can pull out of it at that point.
But do they want him?
You know, one win is all they need.
Do they want him to pull out of it?
I'm just saying, you know, one win is all they need to get back to bowl eligibility, first of all. And I feel like this is more of a reloading year. So I'm like, I'll admit I haven't paid that much attention to Texas A&M this year. But it kind of makes me wonder, like, what their expectations were coming into the season that, you know, you're running with a freshman quarterback in a kind of a young defense. So it's like, what were you expecting?
They've been expecting better than this, clearly. Okay, so I have his buyout in front of me. Do you want to take a guess at what his buyout is?
I'm going to say like $7.5 million.
Keep going.
$10 million?
Just north of $10 million. It's exactly it. As of December 1st, so that might change slightly of this year, $10.41 million. But then again, they got that SEC money. Does it matter?
I think at a certain point it starts to matter.
I guess. It's he's done okay. People thought because wasn't he there when Johnny Manziel was finishing up, him and Mike Evans? So
yes.
That kind of makes a difference. Yeah, he's been there since 2012. So, yeah, he's makes good money. He's getting – but I don't know. People say he could go to the NFL, he'd get fired. But A&M's like, yeah, it's in the SEC. It's an okay – it's still a pretty good job, but it's not – like it's behind Auburn, Alabama, LSU, Florida. It's like the middle of the pack job in that conference. Still a very good job. And here's the thing, too. I think why people are upset, and I do have some background of what's going on in the area because of what I hear and where I'm from and stuff, but they're it's similar to like any other rivalry. They don't play Texas every year, but they think they should be way better because they're in SEC and that Texas is down. They're upset because they're not playing as well as they are either. And so there's always that fans like, you got to be better than Texas and crap, and Texas is doing what? I don't know. It's I would good money. Because my brother wanted him gone. Like, you remember that lawyer who put on Facebook and Twitter, Board of Regents guy after the UCLA comeback and win? He, like, wanted him fired. That guy's going to blow his head off. Or whatever, you know what I mean? It's going to go nuts if that's the case. If they lose, my brother would go the same way. If they lose, he'll give me a call or a text like, fire Kevin Sumlin now, all caps. But if they happen to lose, the Aggies, he's gone. And Lobos could fire a coach, and Bob Davey can. You know Bob Davey used to coach at Texas A&M, right?
He was with their DC
before he took over Notre Dame, and so he knows what's going on down there. But even with him getting them prepared for what he's experienced down there, and I've been there too. It's 100,000 people. We'll see how many people show up, but extremely loud. Stadium rocks and shakes. It's pretty one of the better atmospheres out there. But if Lubber's going to win, you got to trim down the throwbow talk, like we've been, even though we've been starting that, but. Throw for maybe 12 or 14 times, run the ball well, and maybe make Aggies turn the ball over a few times. But I think it's going to be them doing what they do best and run the ball and run their unique offense because Colorado State sees this offense. Air Force sees this offense. When they play in the Mountain West, Boise State sees the offense. A&M's never seen the offense. So if Aggies are going to lose and Lobos are going to upset, they got to do it on the ground game. I'm not going to predict that's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is like a 35-20 game.
I honestly don't think it's going to be that close.
You think it'd be a blowout?
Yeah, because, you know, for as much as New Mexico's probably going to want to establish the run game, let's not forget that Texas A&M also has a pair of really good linebackers who have shown that they are really good at stopping the run. And if you haven't paid attention to the Aggies all year long, keep an eye on Tyrell Dodson. Keep an eye on Otara Alaka. Those two guys, 21 tackles for loss combined, 9.5 sacks combined. And we know that, like, if New Mexico gets behind, like, they're not shy about throwing the football, even though they should probably stop trying to make that happen. It, to me, this just seems like a recipe for disaster. And so I'm expecting A&M to win this one pretty big. I'm going to say 35-7.
Okay, all right, that's fair. All right, next game. We got to move along here. We're kind of taking a bit a while here, but let's move on now. Wyoming Air Force, late night. Got a lot of late games here going on. 8:15 Mountain Time, 7:15 Pacific, ESPNU. I'm just kind of surprised Air Force is a field goal favorite, even though I know they're at home, but it kind of surprises me a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think they're definitely going to have to show that their offense can rebound after getting shut out last week.
Yeah.
Which I think against this Wyoming defense, maybe a little bit easier said than done. Though, you know, if you watched the Border War last week, if you listened to our recap show, you noticed that Dalen Dawkins was, you know, he was a guy who was able to attack the Wyoming defense right at its heart, right between the tackles. You know, and whether that's a factor of Wyoming really being tested by injuries along the interior, or whether it's just the kind of the strength of the CSU offense being able to run the ball between the tackles, mm-hmm. you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you saw a lot of Air Force trying to do the same thing, you know, trying to get their fullbacks, especially in the mix, you know, Taven Burdo, Parker Wilson between the tackles. You got two big guys who can accomplish more or less the same thing that Dawkins did last week.
So when you look at what's going on, like, because it's hard to tell because what Wyoming's doing, they've been playing better, obviously. But how much do you account last week's snow game, because it's a unique situation? Do you think their defense is, I know the defense is good, but is it that good by holding the Rams to that low of a point total? Or do you think it's just, oh, maybe it's a play calling by the Rams half or the weather where they were able to, you know what I mean, like, is it that good of a defense even though playing Air Force is basically the complete opposite playing the Rams?
Well, I mean, obviously it would be kind of disingenuous to ignore the weather as maybe playing some kind of a factor, but you know, when Colorado State got inside the 40-yard line, oftentimes they didn't convert last week. And if you look at what Wyoming's been able to do this year as far as, you know, stopping opponents in the red zone, they're within the top 40. Like, they rank 35th as far as, you know, opponents being able to finish drives. And that's not something that, well, actually, I should take that back. Because that's, you know, even though they got shut out last week, you know, they didn't make many trips. I don't think they took any trips inside the 40 last week, did they? You know, I may have mentioned the exact same thing last week when I say on offense, Air Force still ranks second in points per trip inside the 40. So I think that, you know, yeah, maybe they bent a little bit when it came to the running game and things like that, but they didn't give Nick Stevens many opportunities to throw, which I think is to their credit. Like, they sacked him twice and, you know, really held his opportunities down when it came to standard down passing. And, you know, you're not necessarily going to face that same thing because how often is Arian Worthman going to be throwing the football anyway?
About five times, 5 to 10 times.
Exactly.
It's because this matchup is number one offense versus number one scoring offense versus number two scoring defense. But it's kind of misleading just because of what Air Force does on the ground. Because they'll get up points, they'll put up yards. Do you think, I'm just wondering, will Wyoming's, like you mentioned, if they Air Force not get passed very much, that kind of negates kind of part of a strength for this Wyoming defense with Andrew Wingard and stuff. However, he gets to the line of scrimmage, they do a lot of safety blitzes, they get back there to the backfield. And so maybe they'll just bring him up more. Like Andrew Wingard, he's 14th in the conference in TFLs. So maybe they'll mm-hmm. do more blitz with him, bring him up closer occasionally. That could come back to bite them, but I think Wyoming would take the risk of bringing him on the blitz to stop the running game or inch him closer than just wait for the pass all day and take him out of the game. Also, real quick note, where this will be interesting up against the running attack, Carl Granderson and Johanna Goffin, I think you mentioned, they both have top two in the conference in TFL. So they get the backfield, so it may not matter if Air Force does the whatever option they're doing, if they're in the backfield disrupting the pitch or whatever, that might actually be able to slow down this Air Force rushing attack to not being as efficient if you're already in the backfield getting a hand in Worthen's face, knocking over the pitch guy or getting or the receiver guy in those option passes. Maybe that I'm thinking this might be Air Force will be struggling a bit to move the ball.
Big if, though, because did you realize Wyoming lost yet another defensive lineman?
Who did they lose? Did I forget? Did I just name him?
True freshman Revonte
Holt. Another defensive tackle, right?
Tore his ACL last week. He's done for the year.
They're so thin at that position, that area.
Yeah, so, you know, Guy Fan has been great, and Carl Granderson has been great, and those guys are definitely going to be in the conversation for, you know, defensive, you know, probably defensive player of the year honors, let's be real. But, you know, according to the Casper Star Tribune, our good acquaintance Brandon Foster, they're going to be starting another true freshman up in there. I lost the guy's name. This is really weird.
Sorry, I'm not sure who you're referring to. I'm trying to think too.
No, I scrolled down. The Javari Jackson. I scrolled too far down. You know, so he, you know, you're talking about another young guy, you know, probably a talented guy. He's going to be surrounded by talented guys, and I think that'll make his life easier. But still a new guy, you know, at one of the most important positions on the field, especially when it comes to this matchup, when you know you're going to be getting a lot of, you know, different looks on the interior.
Well, then what do you think is going to be the big difference? Is it going to be that, or is it going to be, like, we haven't mentioned Josh Allen. Is he going to step up and have a good game against the Air Force defense, which hasn't been all that good? Like, what's he going to do? Like, I don't know. He's been getting, like, I read the piece. There's a piece that was written in The Athletic about, he hasn't, like, kind of what I wrote earlier a few months ago, just minus the quotes, which isn't whatever you want to think about that. But, like, he played bad with Iowa versus Oregon. He's finally playing in his stride, but he just wills in the victory a little bit. Like, he'll run the ball. Like we mentioned during the recap, he'll do, like, the veer play or the sort of a run-pass option. But is he going to, like, for them to, I mean, win? Because they have literally no running game. Like, no, besides Allen, they have no running game. I don't know how they beat CSU last week, frankly, their defense. But is this going to be a game where the defense has to give them short fields and Josh Allen just kind of does it himself by getting medium passes to, like, James Price, or get Austin Fort back in the game or back in the conversation of him scoring touchdowns every time he touches the ball?
I mean, I don't think that would surprise me if that were the case. But what I think this game is going to come down to is probably those home run throws that Air Force wants to connect on every so often. Because for as good as the Wyoming secondary is going to be, like you mentioned, you know, bringing up Wingard to kind of defend against the run, that could be a really dangerous proposition. Because in conference play, like, Air Force has been, on the whole, a little bit better than they were in non-conference play, like when it comes to throwing the ball. I take that back. They've been a little bit worse. But they still, like, are above average as far as quarterback rating is concerned. Like, they're completing a little under 50%, so it is a 50-50 proposition. But they're averaging about 8.5 yards per attempt, which is nothing to shake a stick at. And they do have 4 touchdowns against 3 interceptions. And when I was thinking back to the game from last year, you know, Wyoming won the game, but I think a lot of that came down to the fact that Nate Romine threw 3 interceptions in that game. And he only completed 6 of 19 passes. So while those 6 completions went for 188 yards, you know, it was the turnovers that really did them in. So I'm not expecting Worthman to have to throw 19 times. I think if they do, then Air Force is probably playing from behind and they're probably not going to win this game. But, you know, if he makes that kind of throw to Ryan Reffitt that he missed last week against Army, that can change the tenor of the game, especially if it comes early and Wyoming has to play from behind. So that would be something that I'd keep an eye on.
So, all right. So with this match, there's a lot of small things in this, what could happen in this game. I'm thinking, because it is a rivalry game, I guess, sort of. Is there a trophy on the line of this matchup?
I don't believe so,
There needs to be. We need to find all the trophy games.
There probably should be.
What should be the fighter jet or whatever? I don't know. Cowboy. Whatever. Do you know the Air Force is wearing their 1980s kind of throwback uniform in this matchup? Where
that's
they have
be rad.
It's, honestly, looking at it, it's like I don't see a big difference, but I guess the big deal is they have a giant Falcon on their shoulder pad. So I guess that's kind of about the only difference I see. I wonder if Air Force, I think what they should do on offense, like I always mention this, they kind of go away from the fullback dive from Parker Wilson. I think if they're, I think with the way that Wyoming's front, like the, we mentioned, all the injuries to their front four, front seven there. I'm wondering if Air, I think Air Force is going to run the ball well. And a lot, they're just going to wear down the line, even with Carl Granderson back there getting to the backfield. I think Air Force is going to have a big day running the ball. And I think it's going to be a close one. I think Air Force is going to get the victory here. I think they'll do it. Because they...
So what do you think the score is going to be?
It's going to be kind of in between. Not, I'm going to go 27-21. I think Wyoming will get some points, but it'll be more Air Force moving the ball better because I think they'll just wear down the defensive front for Wyoming. And until Josh Allen proves that he can that's too easy to say that, but if there's no running game, they can't rely on Josh Allen to do it all because he hasn't been able to. So they need to find somebody to run the ball well enough for some combination that's not Allen. Like, if he has 40 yards, great, that's a bonus for him, but they need to find somebody who can move the ball, and if they don't, they're not going to win, and you can't just rely on Allen to do so, and I think that rushing attack from the Falcons will just kind of eat alive Wyoming, and they'll kind of pull away late.
I think a lot of it is going to depend on whether Air Force can take care of the football. Because, you know, one thing that, you know, I don't think we've talked enough about this year. Do you realize that Air Force has fumbled 24 times this
year? That's a lot. Seems like a lot.
Do you know how many of those they've 20. Lost?
No, kidding. Four.
No. Not quite, but they've only lost 9. So... You know, we talk about, or I think we have talked about in the past, the idea of fumble luck, which is, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar, it's essentially the idea that, you know, everything that goes into forcing a fumble is skill. And then everything that happens after the ball is on the ground is luck. And so, you know, when you look at especially Arian Worthman, for instance, he's fumbled 14 times, but only lost 6 of them. So he in particular has been really lucky when it comes to hanging on to the football this year. Tim McVay has fumbled 3 times, but he hasn't lost any of them. And I think against this Wyoming defense, like, we know that they thrive off of creating turnovers. So if they get short fields, you know, Wyoming, I think, is going to be able to punch it in more often than not. And that's going to put Air Force on its heels. So while I'm expecting it to be kind of a back-and-forth game, I do have Wyoming winning this one, and I'm going to say they're going to win it 21-17.
21-17, interesting. 21. Okay, that's fair. You can go with it. If that's what you want to do, sure. No kidding.
I'm doing it.
That's probably fine. It's going to be a close one. I think Air Force will get it done just because, yeah, I think that's what they can do. So that's what I'm going. That's where I'm going with on this matchup here. So, all right, next matchup here. I'm trying to get. I've been opening too many tabs here to get information for everybody here. But next matchup, this was formerly the game of the year. I thought it would be Boise at Colorado State. It's moved up to a -6 in favor, +6, I guess, in favor of Boise State on the road. CBS Sports Network, 7:30 Pacific time, 8:30 local time. Question for you, Matt: is this finally the time the Rams beat Boise State in conference play?
Ooh.
You don't have to answer that. We can give that weight till the end, but let's give me reasons why you think the Rams could get this victory.
I'm gonna say we're getting to this right off the bat, right?
Well, wait, we'll give them a few minutes to figure it out.
Here, okay. So, do we want to start by making the case?
Yeah, make the case for the Rams
for Colorado State. Okay, so I think, you know, and it's going to come down to whether they can continue running the ball successfully. Because, you know, as we just talked about with Wyoming, you know, we saw that Dalen Dawkins is kind of the guy. So while, you know, Rashad Penny is off setting records and things like that, and Diosome St. Juice is having a really good year, do you realize that Dawkins currently ranks in a tie for 4th as far as yards per carry?
4th in the conference or country?
Fourth in the conference.
That sounds about right, I guess.
So, you know, while he always, well, he hasn't really been like the guy at the goal line or anything like that, he's been more or less the guy that gets them from one side of the field to the other. And he's really stepped up his game in conference play, especially. You know, he's averaging like 6-something yards on the year, but in conference play, he's up near 7.5, which it actually is, you know, if you accept Ronald Cleveland running the football, that's number one among running backs in conference play. So I think he is more or less the X factor in this game. And I think he's going to have to do a little better than he did last year when they played Boise State. Because, you know, he only had 66 yards on 14 carries. And I think they're going to expect him to probably be the kind of guy who can carry it 20 times. You know, try and keep, you know, Nick Stevens from having to handle too much against a secondary that's going to be really active trying to defend the pass. But, you know, whether he's going to be up to the task or not is kind of the big X factor in this game. But I don't think there's any doubt that he's been more or less the guy to be the centerpiece of this offense, especially in conference play. Like, he's gone over 100 yards 5 times in 6 games. That's significant. Like, that's the kind of production he wasn't putting up this time last year.
All right, so can I make the case for the Rams, I guess, or for the Boise State, I guess? Well, they've been playing they've been the best team in the past month, plus the conference. They figure out the quarterback situation where, I guess, Cozart's the red zone quarterback, essentially, and Rippon brings him up and down the field, and now, here you go, Cozart, you get the touchdowns. I would say there's that, but I'd say the main thing, like Alexander Mattison, playing, averaging about 100 yards per game the past, since that BYU matchup, but the defense has been playing. There's been no setback. I know that people said it's young in that UVA game at so long ago. They've changed and gotten better, but what do you want to see? Like, I think it'll be key if they could slow down Michael Gallup. I know he was slowed down last week partly because, again, not to harp, say weather did it all, but there was weather issues, and you're not going to throw as much in the snow to his worst game of the year in the amount of receptions and yards. But I'm thinking, I don't think Boise's going to be able to slow him down. But I think they'll be able to do enough to kind of limit him a little bit, maybe limit the running game with Dawkins somewhat. But I think, like, I just like the way they've been playing the past little while. They've been slowing and stopping teams. I know this is the best team they've played in a while, but remember, they shut down Rashard Penny at 53 yards. I know if the Rams can't run, they'll be able to throw the ball reasonably well if they can't run. But I don't think Boise can stop both to limit the Rams to nothing, because I think the offense is too good. But I think they'll be able to stop. I'd give them credit more stopping the running game than the passing game. And so if they're going to force, like, Nick Stevens will get his yards, Gallup will get his yards, but I think Boise can make the Rams throw more than they want to. And Nick Stevens is accurate, but I don't think he'll be that accurate in this game. So that's where I kind of think the difference will be, is that the running game will stutter because of Boise's front seven stop them. And while they may get beat in the passing game from time to time, I don't think it'll be enough. And that's where I'm thinking how Boise could win.
Yeah, here's the big question for me. Can Colorado State get back to creating turnovers? Do you know how many interceptions they have in conference play? They have one.
What were they have in non-conference play?
Oddly enough, it came in the Air Force game.
All right, then.
Air Force threw the ball 4 times, and they picked it off once. But, you know, when you consider all the other teams that they played, like, they've been thrown against a lot at times. Like, Hawaii threw the ball 47 times against them. You know, Nevada threw the ball 42 times against them. Wyoming only threw it 20 times, but they haven't been able to create opportunities for themselves in the way that they were, especially early in the year. You know, so, you know, the numbers, I think, are a little deceptive, to the point where if you focus only on conference play, you know, their opposing quarterback rating currently ranks 8th in the conference, and they've given up 10 touchdowns through the air against just that one interception. You know, a little more than 8 yards per attempt, which is also below average. I think the saving grace is that quarterbacks have been a little bit uneven as far as being able to complete passes. Like, their completion rate against them in conference play is only 56%. That ranks 4th in the conference. So that, I think, is a step in the right direction. But, I mean, chances are in this game, for as well as Cozart and Rippon have been playing, especially recently, they're going to need to create their own breaks, especially in the secondary. And whether that means kind of creating a tip drill among, you know, Jake Schlager, whether it's Kevin Nutt getting back to making plays like he was in non-conference play or anything like that. They're going to need that one way or another, I think, because, you know, if they can get one or two short fields, that might be all the difference this game needs.
I think you're right, but I'm looking at the turnover margin really quick. I think part of there's twofold with this, which I just wanted to look and took a bit further. They've only been plus three once. They've only been positive in four games. And then part of the Oregon State game, but I think a little bit is, you're right, they're not getting turnovers. But it's sort of offsetting a little bit because they're not giving the ball up as much either. But it's still not what. So that's it's true. Like, while they are zero on the year, plus 13, minus 13 for gain and losses, they were getting a lot more turnovers, and they're actually coughing the ball, because in that Oregon State game, I know it's a long time ago, but they forced five turnovers, but they gave it up twice themselves. They gave up three times with Colorado, but Colorado gave it up twice. So they've been – it's kind of been – I know you want turnovers, but the swing hasn't really been that much, but it's just that they're not getting those chances because, yeah, if you're not giving the ball up, great, you don't give it to that team, but you're also not giving your team other chances if you're not getting an interception or a fumble or something. But just want to point that out. But you're right, the defense has been hasn't been great, but has been making some pretty big plays. And so that's what they need to do. Like, if they're going to win, they're going to make big plays, because overall, what are they, like, bottom in the conference, bottom third, and you're at over six yards of play? That's not very good. That's almost the worst in the conference compared to Boise, which is a good up just 4.5. So they'll make some big plays, but they haven't been doing that the past couple weeks. While the offense has been protecting it, they haven't been getting, say, a pick six like they had versus Oregon State or other games, or an interception to take it all the way back to the inside the other red zone or something like that. They need to make those to get that game. I know they're hard to predict, even though there is that turnover luck stat we measure from time to time. The defense needs to make a play like that to help the offense out, because if you're going to beat this Boise State team, they run the ball well, they start to pass the ball well. But the Rams, lost, who did they lose? Was it Jabril Parker, right? In secondary? Yeah, so they lost him. So. And so it's like, who do you have back there? They got to make some plays somehow. And they might be able to do it, but Boise's just been improving each week after week. And so I don't know if that's going to be the case.
And the flip side to all of that, which I think is also equally significant, Boise State so far is one of only two teams nationally that hasn't thrown an interception in conference play.
Interesting.
And you're never going to guess the other team.
Just tell me who it is, then.
It's Idaho.
What? Idaho?
Idaho and Boise State, only teams in conference play that haven't thrown an interception yet.
Interesting. All right, so what's your...
So that's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's extremely important, but it's also a really tall task for the Rams to undertake.
So what's your prediction?
I think Boise State's going to win it. And I think it's going to be probably as competitive as last year's game was. I'm expecting it to be a one-score game. But ultimately, I don't know if Colorado State has enough answers on defense, because, you know, we just spent like 3 or 4 minutes talking about the mm-hmm. passing game and their advantages over the secondary. But let's not forget, Alexander Madison still had the hot hand of the last month, too. So I think it'll be back and forth. I think it'll be close, but I do have Boise State winning this one like 28-24.
I think the way Boise's – I'm kind of with you, too. I think Boise's been playing – not that the teams have been going in the opposite direction, but the Broncos have been just been increasing each week. And I guess the Rams, they've been – they lost a little bit to – was it back-to-back losses now, Air Force Wyoming? I think it'll be a little bit more point, mm-hmm. a few more points, but I think it'll be like 30-24 for Boise State. All right, so final game, Fresno State at Hawaii. It is 8 p.m. Pacific, a little bit, actually an hour earlier than normal they've been doing their games, but I was able to test the Watch Stadium app on my Android phone to watch Hawaii football. Worked pretty well. Not too bad.
It did. I finally figured out they have it on Android.
It just happened like last week, I think.
I know, I'm extremely glad for that. This game, however, just mm-hmm. so everybody knows, if you're looking to watch it on television, I don't know about anywhere else in the country. I know in Hawaii, as usual, it's on Spectrum pay-per-view. In Fresno, in and around the valley, it's going to be on KC24, which is the local NBC affiliate.
So check out for that. Yeah, KC. So that's always good. Nice. You can watch it in Fresno. You don't have to worry about it. They came to some sort of agreement or deal. But did you... Jeez, sorry, autoplay video. Did you happen to have issues with the pause button popping up every time on the Android app?
No, actually, I didn't.
I had that come up every time again. I was like, what's going on? Where it just kind of overlay. They play what's still going, but it's like you tap part of the screen where where you could pause it or you could see if it's live or fast forward or rewind. I'm like, oh, that's annoying. All right, but to the game. We have a matchup where Fresno is a I'd have to look it up, and I don't have time to do so, so maybe somebody can tell us. When's the last time Hawaii's been a home 10-point underdog or double-digit underdog?
Probably sometime during the Norm Chow era.
Maybe when USC came to town a couple years ago? I'm betting that might be it.
Sometimes during the Norm Chow era?
Yeah, emphasis. Multiple. But Hawaii's been bad. Ever since they lost John Ursua, they haven't been playing very well.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that if you look at the game preview that I've written, and apparently it's already on MWWire.com. But, you know, you really notice not a huge change, but it is a significant change in the last couple of weeks as far as what Hawaii's been able to do, just in terms of total offense. Like, the last 2 weeks have essentially been their worst offensive efforts on a per-play basis all season long. And when you consider their, you know, Fresno State's defense has really been the unit that's led the way, it kind of makes for a seriously potential mismatch because, you know, Drew Brown, I think, is... I don't know if he's necessarily to blame in this. I think he's doing pretty much everything he can. And he's still been pretty good about, you know, taking care of the football and things like that. But, you know, I've had the same question 2-3 weeks in a row now. Like, I think we know Dylan Colley is able to step into the role that Ursua had before. But who else is going to catch passes? And I still have no idea who that's going
to
be.
Well, even with Colley, he hasn't been... It's hard to replicate Ursua, what he can do, but he's not really getting even close to that. I know it's hard. He had the 200-yard games I mentioned a couple times, but Colley is stepping up to be the number one guy, but he's not really... being anywhere near what Ursura's production is. It's like, we need somebody. Like I said, they need to... Like I've mentioned a couple times, you need your second, third, fourth, and fifth receiver. Like, give me three more guys who can get 100 yards in receiving game. And then Colley gets maybe an extra 30 to do something. But Amon Barker, I don't know. The St. Juice get a couple more... St. Just a couple more reps in the passing game. He gets a couple of games. He's had three in the past... or six in the past two games. Maybe him, but it's going to be hard because Fresno's defense has been playing pretty well. They've been stopping. Are they going to be able to stop the running game? Because they did. Fresno's rushing defense has been pretty good the past couple weeks against like Lexington Thomas, BYU. They held the guy under 100 yards. They've been doing pretty well the past couple weeks. So, but this can be a challenge. Can Fresno slow down Justin and what he's capable of doing?
I think that they will, if only because, you know, the front seven has they put up more or less the exact same performance for the last month. You know, to me, I think the bigger question is, you know, again, which of the receivers is going to step up? One guy I'm kind of keeping my eye on a little bit, Marcus Armstrong Brown, who we haven't really talked about, I don't think at all, in most of our previews this week, or this year rather. But in the last 3 weeks, his production has inched up a little bit. Like, he had three catches against San Jose State in that win, had five against San Diego State, and three against UNLV. He seems to be that big, rangy target. Like, he's 6'3", he's 200 pounds. He's only averaging 7.5 yards per catch, which isn't very good. You know, but he has a catch rate of, you know, two of every three passes, which is pretty good. And I'm almost wondering, like, if he's going to present a really interesting challenge for, you know, a secondary that, yeah, they've been really good, and they almost had two or three different interceptions last week. But, you know, he's got a height advantage on, you know, pretty much everybody in that defensive backfield, save for Mike Bell at free safety. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, just how often Brown chooses to look in his direction, because I think St. Juice will be fine. But I don't know if he's going to have the same kind of explosive day that he has been to really lead the Hawaii attack like he has at certain points this year.
All right, so let's flip the other side of the ball real quick. That's what Fresno does well. Hawaii is one of the worst defenses in the conference.
They're one of the worst defenses in the country.
Well, there's that too. Way. Seven yards a play is terrible. So Marcus Maximilian hasn't had like a huge passing game. He's been more like you've mentioned, more efficient. He's they found success for him kind of playing backwards in the passing game where they pass on first down more often than not. Could this be his game where he maybe breaks out and has his best game of the year? Because his best game to date, I would probably say the I guess New Mexico game, 3 TDs, 300 yards. Could he have a game in that neighborhood?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say because I went back and I looked at the run-pass ratio in the last 3 weeks, and I figured out that the Bulldogs have run the ball about 64% of the time. So, you know, basically two out of every three plays has been a run. So while Maximilian has been really good throwing the ball on early downs, you know, for as bad as the Hawaii secondary has been week in and week out, I'm not sure just how inclined Kalen DeBoer and Jeff Tedford are going to be to kind of change the game plan. Like, they haven't really been too eager to try and land the early knockout blow, even though I definitely think that there is an opportunity for them to do so in this particular game. So it's kind of hard to say. Like, I don't think they're going to have him throw any more than they need to because they have guys who, you know, even if they haven't been totally explosive this year, you know, you still have the trio in the backfield of Jordan Mims, Josh Hokett, and, you know, if he's back to 100%, I think he's been in recovering the last couple of weeks, Ronnie Rivers. All three of those guys are right around 4.5 to 5 yards per carry, so even if they don't necessarily have the explosive element, they've been really good about keeping the offense on schedule, and I think that's what's been most important to this offense's success.
So you just think they'll just go running with Hoke and everybody, not really pass? Like, are they just going to rely on the running game then? Because that's what it sounds like you think they're going to do instead of and just pass as normal. And if he gets the yards, he gets
I think it is going to look mostly the same. Yeah, because, like, we've seen that Maximilian can throw the deep ball. Like, he did it a couple times last week against BYU. Like, he had the big strike to Jameer Jordan. That was a thing of beauty. Like, he stepped up in the pocket, he set his feet, and it was, like, a perfect strike. But I don't think that this is an offense right now that's really built to pitch the ball around. So even if it seems a little unexciting, you know, the results kind of speak for themselves. Like, the running game is, you know, they've been efficient, if not explosive, and they help keep Maximilian from making too many mistakes. And I think that when you consider the sum of what this team does well, you know, even if it doesn't quite match up with Hawaii's glaring weaknesses, I don't think it's really going to be that big of a deal.
So do you think, like, I know he picked in our pick page. Are you going to stick with that pick?
I think I will.
Tell people who it is. If I remember,
so I have Hawaii covering the spread.
I thought you had Hawaii winning as well.
Because
wasn't it a victory for Hawaii?
No, I had Fresno State.
Oh, I must have read that wrong. Never mind then. Continue. I can't read, apparently.
You told us to pick against the spread.
I did. I apologize.
Because I do think Hawaii is going to be able to cover the 10-point spread. But I think that's mostly owing to the fact that Fresno State really hasn't shown a tendency to, you know, kind of go for the jugular, really. And they've won. Like, I don't know if it was necessarily a close game last week against BYU, but I guess it kind of was by the final margin. So I'm expecting Hawaii to be able to make some plays here and there. I think they'll probably lose the turnover battle, which will make a huge difference in this game. But I think it'll probably be something like 27-20, and Fresno State will win, but Hawaii will cover.
So what's your score then? It's like 20-13, something like that.
No, I said 27-20.
27-20. I think Fresno's going to win like 30-10. I just don't think. Well, no, I'll go 20-10 because, well, I don't know. It's just out of Hawaii, so it always skews things a little bit because they play better at home. But they've been penalized so much, they can't throw the ball as well as they wanted to. Yeah, I'll go 20-10 Fresno. They'll score a little bit because Fresno's stuttered a few times in the red zone and getting points. Like, look at the BYU game. Their defense isn't that great, and they settle for a couple field goals. So, yeah, I'll go 20-10. And would that victory, would that clinch Fresno for the division?
Let's see. They are
4-1 at the.
They're 4-1 right now, so they would move to 5-1. You know, assuming San Diego State wins. Actually, no, they're off this week. Just kidding. So they would be a full game up on the Aztecs. They'd have the tiebreaker. So I think they would have to lose to both Wyoming and Boise State.
Correct. Okay, I'm looking at it now because, yeah.
So basically, if the Aztecs win out and the Bulldogs lose out, the Aztecs will win the West Division. That's pretty much all it comes down to.
No, actually, no, not necessarily. Aztec Bulldogs need to go 1-2, and Aztecs have to win out for the Bulldogs or for the Aztecs to win the title in the West Division. Because
that's what I mean.
Yeah, Fresno just needs to win two games, and they're not gimmies at Hawaii, at Wyoming, hosting Boise State. So not gimmies at all. So basically, if they beat Hawaii, there was that share of the title, most likely. Well, not even share, but good, they're in good shape, essentially. They got to lose two of the three, which I don't think they'll be the case. And on the Mountain side, real quick, since we're discussing it, there's a lot that could happen in the Mountain Division, and so we may not go through every scenario because it's probably worthy of an article. You guys can read what we're talking about with that. But basically, Boise wins, they're in. Wyoming is in the same scenario as San Diego State. They need Boise to lose twice. And Boise has, what, three games left as well? Yes.
Yes, they do.
So Wyoming needs Boise to lose two games, which, who knows. Colorado State can be in the mix. It'll take a lot, though. They'll need Wyoming.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get that tiebreaker versus the Broncos, though, that would be huge.
They'd have to beat Boise for sure and have Boise lose at least one more. But here's the thing, they need Wyoming to lose two more. Because if there's a three-way tie, it starts off head-to-head, and Boise or Wyoming's has the advantage over CSU. Air Force.
And let's not forget Air Force.
Has a shot. Remember, they've beaten Boise the past two years in a row. They have beaten the
Still alive.
And also, hey, they beat Colorado State. And they get...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They get three straight division games to close out
Wyoming
the year.
To Boise, so...
So they... Yeah. It's Wyoming at Boise, and then the season finale at home against Utah State.
See, if they go 5-2, that would give Wyoming two losses. Here's what they need to do. They need to win out and have Boise lose one more game. That's how they can win the division. Mm-hmm. Not far-fetched, is it?
I think Fresno's going to be everybody's friend in the Mountain Division.
Fresno play somebody in the Mountain Division left? Yeah.
They play both Wyoming and Boise. So depending on how things shake out, there are gonna be a lot of fans in the Mountain Division rooting for the Bulldogs in the next few weeks.
Alright, anything else you need to add for the show tonight?
I think we're pretty much good.
All right, thanks for tuning in again at MWR.com. Check out this podcast. Your feed might be full because I was a bit delayed and slow and lazy, so there's probably a lot of basketball in the feed. So if you like hoops, listen to it, right? Eli does a good job. I assist Eli in hopefully doing a good job in basketball stuff. But this is football. iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. Check us out, our new home. If you like our page, like it on Facebook as well. Twitter, let's get some more followers up to 2,000. That's our next goal because we're past 1,000 now. And now we have 280 characters to make jokes and grammar errors.
Oh, yeah.
As always. So that's all I got for tonight. Again, leave us a review on those podcast apps you do listen to us on with. And that's terrible grammar. So we'll end now officially. As always, we're biased against your team.